A lot of us never knew Satoru Iwata. We loved him though just by the interviews and his charm in the Nintendo Directs and E3's digital presentations. Like many, I cried. In my friend's car, at home the next morning, and almost the ride home from a drink with my buddy. It's sad to lose someone or something that's dear to many. Family, friends, pets, or something that is sentimental to you plays a major role in every personal life. Nintendo did and continues to do that in my life. Iwata was the gateway for us with Nintendo. Knowing that, he was a humble gate even though he had to protect the interests of Nintendo. When he opened up and talked about games and made announcements, we felt a smile and warm welcome. The directly to you quote will forever stay with us, and no matter how we joke about it, it was powerful, and Iwata may have known that. When he asked us to please understand for a delay, it meant work was going into that game, so we have the quality Nintendo is known for. He didn't go the video game website route and just quote the delay. He stood in front of the camera, took his time to speak in English, and gave us a human apology to our face about the delay. We were disappointed but not raging. We took it as a sign as a better product coming our way. As crazy as it was, I always admired him. He made me yell and type with glee or having a plush of him. Seeing him in puppet form for this year's E3 was super creative. It was mixing fun and zany moments together that represents what Nintendo's all about. I know what Reggie meant about transformation. No one expected this to happen, and I wish it wasn't true. Some may worry, some may not. For a lot of us Nintendo fans and gamers everywhere, transformation will be hard for us. Iwata transformed Nintendo and continued to do so in his final days. Eventually, we will lose more great creators, developers, presidents, CEOs, and more in this gaming industry. Each will leave a legacy like no other. Iwata left more than just a legacy. He reminded us that video games should be enjoyed by all and should be fun. If that is in place, the business will be there. I always supported Nintendo ever since I had the Nintendo Entertainment System. I may not play all the games that came out from Nintendo, but when I did and when I do, I feel a pleasant emotion that makes everything worth the purchase. People may think of me weird when I say older people are playing Splatoon and having that one more round fun. It makes me smile when naysayers admitting their hosts were proven wrong and actually apologize for assuming what would happen when they played the game. I felt ecstatic seeing Iwata come and announce something out the blue and talk about the gameplay. It was just little things that touched many that Iwata did. As I leave this blog, I wish I could thank him for bringing joy and memories and being that humble gateway. I still support Nintendo. I will still watch the Nintendo Direct. I still remember what Iwata's intentions was for us, to have fun. He may have left this world unexpected, but we can expect that his legacy will continue to live in Nintendo games and leave a big mark for everyone. Thank you, Satoru Iwata, for everything you have done. You will surely be missed. Now everybody, hold a Nintendo game in the air and just say directly to you. And at this time, we will hold a moment of silence. Thank you. And now, let's start Optional Opinion. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Optional Opinion here on the Anomalous Radio Network. I'm your host, Eddie V. Thank you guys for joining in. Hoping everybody had a great 2 weekends off, as I have been busy. Hope everybody had a great 4th of July. I was on vacation last week, and man, I really enjoy my time on vacation. Really have fun with the people that I was around with. But today's episode, man, has a lot happened. As you can see, that Satoru Iwata passed away actually Saturday. They announced it Sunday that he had passed away from a bile duct. And we thought that it was gone, but it wasn't. So we do miss him. If you listen to the intro of this, you will hear that eulogy that I actually wrote for him and read. I'm really going to miss him. Things won't be the same, but I think they'll find a president and someone that will continue on to lead Nintendo in the right direction. But today's episode, there's been just a lot of crazy things going on, a lot of controversies, and just weird things. Today I'm going to be talking about Randy Pitchford. He's been a lot in the news lately. Talk about some of the Batman Arkham DLC content. Talking about why the timing of the actual DLC is kind of short, and was it worth the $40? Be talking about a little bit of Metroid since I've been playing it lately, and talking about some other RPGs for the PlayStation 1. So it's going to be a mix of a lot of things. And I got a hidden project coming up soon. I was going to be posting that project next week, but unfortunately, due to timing, I'm postponed it. So I'm actually going to do it for August. So hopefully people will be looking out for that. But let's get into the topic. Randy Pitchford, he is the president of Gearbox, and he just really been saying some crazy things in interviews. And some of the stuff that he's been saying, it's going to be coming from Destructoid and IGN. This one says, Randy Pitchford on Gearbox success. Some people say this, and this is reported by Chris Carter from Destructoid. You may not know us from such quality games as you may know us from such quality games as Alien Colonial Marines. Randy Pitchford opened with during his keynote at the Develop conference in Britain. Oh boy. Pitchford goes on in his speech to boast of the accomplishments of his hobby grade studio, noting that if you're making entertainment on a grand scale, if you're reaching millions, then there will be tens of thousands of people who absolutely hate us, and some percentage of those who take it upon themselves to let us know how they feel. Okay, that makes sense so far. Go on. There is always the person who's got to stand on the sandcastle that they must crush it. That's their way of relating to that. It's typically a less sophisticated mind. There's a dark part of us all that likes the idea of crushing a sandcastle, but most of us will respect it and would let it be. That's why we like playing video games, where we can blow stuff up and no one gets hurt. Some people thrive on that type of feeling. Some people are sadists. Okay, hold on a second. That would mean a whole lot more coming from someone who could actually take seemingly any form of criticism, as Pitchford has proven time and time again that he cannot, along with his inability to take any responsibility for what happened with Colonial Marines, instead blaming basically everyone else even years later. He's had a number of run-ins with the press and fans fueled by his arrogance. Remember this little nugget? I don't think he should have another Q&A session anytime soon. Stick to pontificating. And it's really weird that he would just think of that about gamers, that, you know, that we're sadistic, that we like blowing stuff up and playing pretty much N-rated games and things of that nature. About the Q&A thing, they were going to have one. I think they had an open Twitter Q&A for Randy Pitchford, and on the morning of the Develop conference, they tweeted our question for Duval Magic, which is Gearbox's Randy Pitchford, I guess, to put some questions to him for the Q&A. And they was like, use the hashtag ask Randy. And then this goes, unfortunately for Develop, the people on the internet do indeed have a lot of questions for Pitchford. Most of which seem to still involve the disaster that was Aliens Colonial Marines. Also, hashtag kind of reads like butt candy. On one hand, Pitchford still has a lot to answer for with regards to aliens. That's to say, nothing for Duke Nukem Forever, or the fact that Gearbox, generally speaking, doesn't make particularly good games anyways. On the other hand, Pitchford blessed the world with this. Battleborn is FPS, hobby-grade, co-op campaign, genre-blended, multi-mode, competitive, e-sport, meta-growth, choice, plus epic Battleborn heroes. Anyways, people have questions for Randy. One person posted, remember the time you lied to Joystick about how Gearbox got its name? And then another one posted, why wasn't I able to take these two aliens with me? And then they have a video of it on YouTube. Can I make an indie game and use screenshots from Colonial Marine pre-release built to sell pre-orders? Will you agree that having Duke drown himself in his jacuzzi is how you really win Duke Nukem Forever? The Ask Randy hashtag is as big a train wreck as Alien Colonial Marines. Is it true that Benny Hill was one of the inspirations for the animations of Colonial Marines? Do you ever look at Creative Assembly's Alien Isolation and think, why do people like this? Colonial Marines had more guns. Where happened to Furious 4? And do you expect to get away with a debacle like Colonial Marines in future? Now we have Steam refunds. And then someone just put, have you ever seen Two Dogs 69? Yeah, that just people have questions. And we'll get into that a little bit. But on IGN, he's talked about how he invested his own money of $10 and $15 million into Alien Colonial Marines. And it says for how much he lost to a customization of embezzlement. Gearbox CEO, and this is coming from IGN, Luke Camali. The last two ones were from Destructoid, and you can find them online. It says Gearbox CEO Randy Pitchford has spoken about the moderate claims surrounding development and release of Aliens Colonial Marines. Gearbox Software was fighting against a lawsuit with Sega that claims Gearbox funneled money for Alien Colonial Marines and two other projects. The studio was dropped from the suit back in May. Speaking to IGN at Develop Britain, Pitchford has revealed he lost between $10 million and $15 million of his own money on the project and refuted the accusations that have been leveled at the studio. I don't know, he begins when he asks what happened. We made an Aliens game. I wouldn't trade the experience for anything in the world. I got to, the team and us, we got to rebuild the Sulaco. We got to work with Sid Mead to do that. We got to build all of Hadley's hope. Not just the few hallways of the colony that you see in the film. We built power loaders and APCs and dropships. Holy crap, we went out to the derelict. I'm just so glad that I got the opportunity to spend time in that space. I understand that there are some people that didn't enjoy it, and I'm very sorry about that. That's the nature of entertainment. Some of my favorite bands who made some of the songs I think are the best in the world have other songs on B-sides that I completely don't care for. It's going to happen, so I don't know what to say. It's so interesting. I don't like to spend a lot of time. I like to build and I like to create and I like to look ahead. But it's so, like, imagine a mind who played the game and decided that they didn't like it. And there's plenty that decided they did. I mean, it's never been measured, but clearly on average, the critics don't favor it. But imagine that mind and is thinking Gearbox is an amazing developer, but they don't like this game. And instead of thinking, well, that can happen, some of those minds have to invent a narrative for why. Frankly, I think that's how most of the religions get invented. Like lightning strikes a tree, it's weird. I can't explain it with what I know, so some agency did it. They can't fathom that we made something they didn't like, so we must have wanted that to be the case. It's such an insane claim. Okay, so the plan is we had a great game and purposely made it worse because that's how we're going to make money? That's absurd effing claim. Oh, that's an absurd effing claim. I lost somewhere between $10 million and $15 million that I invested in that game. I still don't regret it. I wouldn't trade that experience for anything. But no, the plan was to entertain people with this awesome aliens experience. What's weird is that I actually liked the game. Some people invented this myth that if we tried it, it would have been good. So we must not have tried. Maybe we didn't spend the money on this game. Maybe we spent it on another one that was good. So there's this rumor we embezzled money from aliens and spent it on Borderlands. Firstly, that's absurd. And secondly, the actual truth is the opposite, which is just a lot more embarrassing. We took a huge amount of the money that we made off the first Borderlands, invested it into aliens trying to make it as good as we could, and still ended up disappointing a huge number of people. That's a whole other kind of failure, but it's all from this fundamental truth, which is we tried to do a good job and entertain people, and some people didn't like it. When I engaged some folks on it, some people were infected by these videos. There was one that went around calling out these massive changes, and it's like, okay, here's a video of a player going down the umbilical cord from a demo we did in 2012, and you look up and a soldier smashes through the glass, then he falls and gets up and keeps going. Now, in the demo in 2012, when he smashes through the glass, there's loads of glass shattering, and when he lands on the floor, there's blood on the ground, and when he comes up, he looks at his left hand, and there's blood on it. In the final game, there's no blood on the ground and no glass shattering. And that's a scandal. Like, the tiniest thing. People are fine with us completely changing the art direction of Borderlands. But this, it proves it's not about the changes. It's about how you feel about the result. Did you think why is the result is like this? Did you go looking for reasons for the change at little micro things? When asked whether the final changes were due to the earlier demos being vertical slices of the finished game, as was the case with Watch Dogs or The Witcher 3, Pitchford denied this. For those unaware, a vertical slice is a snippet of gameplay able to run at a very high fidelity, simply because that's what it's designed to do. Once the rest of the game is added around this, however, and the systems have to contend with the entire world to keep running, it becomes much harder to do. Pitchford states, in the case of the shattering, it didn't make sense. Later, you see the umbilical buckle and all the glass was fine, so it was a logical problem. Same with the blood. This guy just hit. Blood happens, and that's suddenly on the ground like magic. This umbilical was put there by the ship that just connected to the Sulaco. It should be clean on the inside, and it was a fan that pointed this out to us when he saw the demo. He asked how there was blood on the ground when the umbilical just hit. It was a good catch, and we fixed it. It's just insane. The next one was in the very next shot in a room where originally there was one of those long halogen two lights that was swinging, and it looked pretty cool. But in the final game, the level designer decided a klaxon would be better, so changed it, and suddenly, that's a scandal. It went from a swinging light to a spinning light, and all those things could have been either way, and it wouldn't have affected the results. The content that those people produce, the profit from views, I get it. And it's part of our world, but dude, I mean, I still see videos from people suggesting 9/11 is staged, and they're very convincing. But, I mean, I'm just grateful that people care enough about our stuff that it's a worthy enterprise for them to spend that kind of time. Sometimes we'll make a great track that everybody likes, and sometimes we'll make a song that's just off, and that's the nature of the beast. But we gotta keep making stuff. Pitchford also spent some time chatting about the fact that a new authentic Brothers in Arms title is on the way, as well as what the future holds for the Borderlands franchise. And that was from Luke Kamali, and he's an IGN UK news editor. And it's weird that he says all of this, because people are mad at the fact that you showed a demo of great graphics, and son of all, when the game releases, nothing that you showed in the demo is in the game. Well, majority of what they show in the demo isn't in the game. And that's kind of weird that that he would just say these things and just be like, well, a fan pointed it out. Well, how can a fan point it out when he's never played the demo? When the Alien Colonial Marines demo was out, everything was pre-rendered. It was a trailer. No one had got their hands on the actual game till the actual copy came out. So when the game came out and people played it, they seen that everything changed. If you look at the introduction, it says Gearbox, but TimeGate Studio pretty much did most of the work. And Randy Pitchford said that when it was hinted that once they did most of the game, they would hand it to Gearbox and Gearbox would piece it together and fix anything. But by the looks of it, it was just like you guys shouldn't even have to have another developer work on it. You as Gearbox should have worked on that game. Because what everybody is getting the idea of is that while Gearbox works on Borderlands, someone else can work on Alien Colonial Marines. And you never show any of the gameplay of the actual game. You kept showing the same trailer. The trailer is beautiful. It looks nice. It's very enticing. It really gives you an idea of what you was going to expect in the game. Even with Game Informer, when they seen it, they seen the trailer. They even did a story on it. And then the game comes out, and nothing that was in that trailer represented what was on the game. Like, you can look at the lighting. You can look at the art direction. You could just see the bugs and everything. And I haven't played it, but it came out. It was $59.99, and people were, I think it sold 1 million copies, but people got gypped on buying this game. And especially when the reviewers can't really say nothing because they're under an NDA. They're held to an embargo. And they can't say nothing until that embargo is up and released. And boy, was the talk about that game out there. It was very disappointing to many. And people only did videos to pinpoint all the bugs that was in the game. And it just felt like they were just robbed. So how, you know, he could come out and just completely say these things and just and make himself look good. People wanted to ask some questions and everything. People wanted to give their opinion, and he blocked them and everything. And that's and kind of said some other things. And it's unfair that you don't want to hear stuff like that. You got to take criticism. And once again, he doesn't feel like taking it. He would rather take the praise and not the criticism. And that's kind of unfair for a president of a video game company to do that. You know, you got to take criticism. There is a Jimquisition that you can watch. And he also has this podcast. And I think it's digital developers or something like that. They have a 1-on-1 podcast, and the guy who made the Slaughtering Grounds is attacking Jim and just making these accusations. And it's a really good, interview to hear. Jim Sterling, who's the person who even undid a review on, which kind of started everything off. He did a review of Aliens and Colonial Marines for Destructoid, and just pinpointed all the crap that was in the game, all these bugs and just all these problems. And you know, Sega did settle a lawsuit, paying out. There was a settlement, and Gearbox kind of got away with it. And it's kind of weird now that, you know, the way that the people he wants to talk and behold Battleborn, who knows if it's going to be good or not. But because of this, I think it might hurt Gearbox in the near future. I really don't know. I don't know Randy Pitchford. I don't know what he's going to be saying. It's really weird that he, after the Alien Colonial Marines came out, he kind of went quiet. I know he did a podcast with the Nerdist with Chris Hardwick. They did a talk. So you could go ahead and check that out. For me personally, I just think that he shouldn't even have brought up aliens, colonial marines. Now, if he was asked about it, he should have responded in a way that respectfully. Not saying that he didn't want to talk about it, but I think he should have addressed it and just be like, you know, if people feel that we let them down, we're sorry. You know, we should do better. Now, that might feel like we're admitting to something wrong, but that's what people want. That's what the readers want. They want that admittance, because they should have said, next time we think of getting a project handed to us, we should not work with outside. We should really work on the game. If Borderlands could wait, Borderlands is not going anywhere. You know, none of their projects are going anywhere. If anyone hands them a big franchise and they're paying them for their development, they should be able to work on it. So, for me personally, I just find it sad that he had to even go this route. Plus with the Twitter things, he should have answered everybody, even if it was crazy. If you're gonna say ask anything, ask away and respond. I have to check it out still. Hopefully I can, but who knows. So right now we're gonna take a break and I will be right back. And I am back. So our next section is the Batman Arkham Knight DLC content. There's been big problems. To start off, that the PC version they took down off of Steam. The one in Australia, one of the EB Games, I think one of their game stores, had to ship all the PC copies back. And it was a leaked email saying that, you know, they'll be working on it and they probably won't come back out to maybe September or October, like sometime later on in this year for Australia. I don't know if that reflects actually everybody for right now, but because it being such a big problem, they just took it off, which gives really concern. Now, I heard that the game is really good, but there's problems. To get 100%, you have to do the Riddler sections, and there's like over 300, and that's a problem. People complain about the tank battles with the Batmobile, and sometimes the driving sections with the Batmobile has been difficult. But I don't know the sales. I believe it got number one from June for the NPD. It probably sold more on PlayStation 4. But I think everybody said that it runs better on Xbox One. It's just very weird. But this DLC content, it shows that it's getting very problematic. People paid $40 for it. And when it came out, after they said that it was $40, they really didn't tell what it was. And I think after they made some complaints, they started letting out some info about it. With Red Hood, that was a GameStop DLC. That one looks kind of short. The Harley Quinn pre-order DLC, It's been reported that it was only 30 minutes. And now Batgirl, A Matter of Family, is only an hour. And even though this is kind of, you know, it's good out the gate that they're releasing this much content, this DLC is time problematic. Like, if $40 is going to get them small packs and, like, skins and maybe races, a lot of people are going to be upset and be jipped. And we kind of talked about DLC in some past episodes of why is it okay for people to charge a certain amount when they don't know the full extent. You know, everybody still hold DLC up to like Mario Kart 8 standards, where you got a lot of content for $12 and some change. And people like really like that. Where for someone like Rocksteady to release this game with DLC on its way for $40, that's spending $100. And with all these problems, especially for PC players, they can't even play the game. They can't even get the DLC. And you know, if they pay that $40 for that DLC pack for the season pass, they're screwed. They don't even know when they're going to get the game. You know, I expect that, you know, with this DLC, that at least each of them be around 5 hours. Why is it only like, I think if I put everything together, probably maybe 2 hours. That's what I'm thinking. I'm like, in this 3 packs, you know, you got the Red Hood from GameStop as a pre-order, like exclusive. And then Harley Quinn, now, you know, kind of the official Batgirl, like skins. It's just it's a custom creation. You know, you could play as Batman as this character design, that's the skin. Don't nobody really care about that. It might be funny to some people, but it's just like, really, $40 for this part of it? You know, definitely with Destiny, you know, Destiny within the Taken King, that had its whole problematic news story, and people could go and read it. But it's just like, for some of the stuff, you have to buy that collector's pack. If you don't buy it, you don't get like some of the other stuff. And they just hired someone from Reddit for their community management. And it's just kind of weird that, you know, this DLC is getting out of hand. Now, I haven't heard anything about the Witcher 3 DLC, but, you know, the Witcher 3 alone have a lot of content. And that's glad that they do have a lot of content. But this Batman one, I just feel like, people have been literally robbed. And I haven't played the game yet. I will admit, I will be playing it when I start getting an Xbox One, but I'm just not looking forward to this DLC. I'm really not looking forward to it because it doesn't offer anything. And plus, I could just wait for the Game of the Year edition, which will probably come out for the same $60 price. You know, the thing about DLC is that if you're going to pay around 2/3 of the price of a game, or even 1/3 of the price of a game, there's better be a lot. You know, Splatoon, when it came out at $60, and they're adding more content. They're adding more weapons. They're adding more things for the multiplayer. You know, the single player is good. It got like 29 stages, or 26 or 29 stages, and that's all in the game completed. With Splatoon, there's like Splatfest. They're adding new costumes. They're adding new guns, new arenas, new modes and stuff. You know, they're rolling it out, and all of this is free, and they're making the value of the game more and more. You know, the $60 that it came out with, it wasn't that much content, but it was such fun that those 3-minute rounds were just amazing, and people are continuing to play it. So there's longevity within that. This this Batman one, yeah, there's a lot of stuff to do, but you shouldn't be forced to do a side quest to see the true ending of the game. That's crazy. B, if you're going to do a $40 season pass, your content that's going to be in the game needs to be longer. It really does. It shouldn't be 45 minutes or 15 minutes about 45 minutes less than the installation process or half of the installation process, depending on how long it takes to install on the system. You know, that's just weird that you got all these missions and all these characters, and Batman is a big world, so you can actually do something. It's already M-rated, so why not do something really crazy? Why not be like, okay, you know, yes, Harley Quinn is a villain, but she's also like, she's an anti-hero kind of thing, because she does have a comics and stuff, but you know, she's a major character, but there's more that they could have did with that. With Batgirl, they could have did more with that. I think Batgirl could have been almost about a 5-hour campaign. It should have been. They had a lot of delays. So it's just like, you know, they had time to really input a lot of things to do for this. Now, I don't know what else is coming out, but I really, really hope that they fix this. I hope that the next, I really hope that the next DLC is around 2 or 3 hours, because, you know, people are saying that it's fine. But you know, with the way that things are just going, it has to be better. This for $40, I just would not. I wouldn't pay for it, you know, and if you did, I'm not saying that, you know, you made a bad decision or anything, but I really hope that the content that they're giving you is really worth it. So when we come back, I will be talking a little bit about Metroid, and this is going to be very interesting. So I'll be back. So this month of July, I've been playing Super Metroid. I'm part of the Nintendo Voice Chat Book Club. You guys can check that out on Facebook and join us and enjoy games for a month and be ready for a good discussion and talking about our progress and stuff. Now, I played Super Metroid when it came out in 1994. Played that game at my grandma's house. It took me 3 days to beat it. My cousin had the guide and stuff, but I didn't really look at it. I really wanted to explore and get lost and die and stuff. Reason why I'm talking about Metroid right now is that if you listen to and watch E3, you can hear a lot of people moan and complain about Metroid Prime Federation Force and complain that it's not a true Metroid. We just had a discussion with Johnny, Andrew, and Anthony. They did a fresh talk. We just talked a little bit about Metroid. I mentioned that, you know, Metroid isn't supported by many. I think a lot of people haven't started, a lot of people today who haven't started with the first Metroid. I have a feeling that they maybe started with Metroid Prime. And a lot of people are saying, well, Super Metroid is my first time playing a Metroid game, or they can't get into it and stuff like that. And the reason why I say that the Metroid isn't supporting it, because the sales are not big. The sales are not, you know, huge that I guess should be. The sales doesn't match the cry out for it. And it's kind of weird because everybody feels like Metroid should be like Super Metroid. Any Metroid game that comes out should be like 2D. If they do 3D, it needs to be, it can't be like Other M. It might be like the Metroid Prime series and stuff. And it's kind of weird to me that a lot of people will feel that way about Metroid. I feel like every Metroid game that comes out has to feel different. You know, it has to advance. I love Super Metroid. I could play that for days upon days. Me and my friend Johnny, we played the game. We beat it in one day. And just kind of had a complete ball. You know, I died sometimes because I had to bring the game in remembrance. I haven't played it for years. But then, you know, I was just like, okay, this is where it is. And, there were some things that I forgot, and you know, it's good that I did forget them because it felt fresh and it felt renewed to be like, I remember playing this as a kid. The reason why I don't feel like every Metroid game needs to be like Super Metroid is that Super Metroid is its own. It has its own standards. It did something in the 16-bit days that you just didn't see. It was sci-fi, but it was silent, and it you meant to get lost, and you meant to die, and it meant to challenge you. That's what, you know, Super Metroid was. It was an advancement of Metroid and Metroid 2, because even those games have its own thing. Metroid Zero Mission was kind of a remake of Metroid 1, or a reimagine in a way, depending on how you want to see it. Metroid Fusion progressed the story kind of after Super Metroid. And then Metroid Prime was kind of supposed to take place before Metroid even started. That's what it stated. But they kind of went in a different direction. And then Other M was kind of a backstory of Samus, you know, telling how she was when she was with the Galactic Federation, you know, and how Captain Atom was a mentor to her, and how she had to defy the odds because she was kind of the only female. And then when she left, she ended up becoming a bounty hunter. So it kind of, you know, told that different kind of story. It was kind of nice to actually see that. To see, you know, that in Other M. And I feel like Other M, and I keep telling people about this, is that Other M is a learning experience for Tecmo. You know, I believe Tecmo, because of them doing the Ninja Gaiden games, they had a problem. And I mentioned this in our discussion talk. Hopefully it will be going up on YouTube. And I will talk about that next time our podcast. Sorry about that. I think that, you know, with Metroid, that the reason why it doesn't get supported is that I don't think a lot of people have actually played the first Metroid or understand the mechanics of Metroid. Of course, when Castlevania came in, they called it a Metroidvania game because they both share the similar styles. The just difference is that with Castlevania, you get experience points and you level up. So it's kind of more of an RPG mechanic. It has the layout and design of Metroid, but it does some of the way to get stronger different than it does in the Metroid universe, where with Metroid you look out for secrets to find energy tanks and missiles and stuff like that, and you get stronger by that, by getting new powers. And when you get that new power, it challenges you on and teaches you on how to learn it. With Super Metroid, I could not see, you know, everything always being Super Metroid, because I think it would kill the franchise. Now, I'm not saying that Metroid is a bad series. I think Metroid just doesn't have enough power that it, like it has in the past. where, you know, Metroid is very retro. It has a certain formula that you're able to recognize. And I feel that it has to advance. I talked to the guys and I kind of said, you know, with Platinum, I could see Platinum doing a Super Metroid, or if Tecmo does it again, you know, take that learning experience and really flesh it out, because I think Metroid could be big. I think for one, the Metroid series needs side quests, as in that, you know, she knows, Samus knows her mission, and, you know, things are linear. Because I don't feel like, you know, there's side missions when you're going to find extra ammo or extra bombs and stuff like that, or like energy tanks. I don't feel like that's a side mission. I feel like, you know, to get a part for her weapon, you know, she could go out and, you know, explore and maybe fight like a mid boss who might have something, you know, just something like that. Like if she scan part of the planet and it tells a story, and you know, you want to follow up on that story, and you have that choice of being like, okay, I want to find more and I want to explore and see what you get out of it. And then when you get that item, you can scan something and just be like, okay, this is what it does. You know, I think like side missions are really need to stand out, because I believe that the Metroid series can advance. It just really needs to advance more. But for right now, I'm hoping they did mention that it's not coming to Wii U or anything. They're not doing a 3DS version. There are no plans of making a new Metroid just yet. That's probably why we have Metroid Prime Federation Force. I talked about that game in my E3 episode. So, like I said, I am looking forward to playing it next year. I really can't wait for the next Metroid game to come out. I think when a lot of people who are starting out with Metroid, or who has played the Metroid series, I think everybody needs to go back and play each game. So you have, and Zero Mission is not out yet. Hopefully it will come out on the Wii U Virtual Console or the eShop. So you do have Metroid. You have Metroid 2 on the Game Boy, which I think is available on the eShop on the 3DS. You have Super Metroid. You have Metroid Fusion, which is available on the Wii U eShop, so you could play that. You have Metroid Prime. You have Metroid Prime 2 and Metroid Prime 3. You have those, 1 and 2 for the GameCube, and you have 3 for the Wii. They also released the trilogy for Wii, and you could get it for $19.99 on your Wii U for Virtual Console. And then you have Metroid Other M that was on for the Wii, and you could play that game also on your Wii U or on your Wii. So that one is still available to play. There is a pinball game, and there is like a multiplayer kind of game for 3DS. I mean, for the DS. But you can seek those out if you want to, but they are multiplayers, and so they don't really play into the franchise of a story of the Samus's adventures. I should say that. But I think that, you know, like I said, I don't think every game needs to be like Super Metroid in the Metroid series. If you do play the Metroid series, I do want to hear what you have to say about that, but we'll talk about that later. Right now, we're going to go into our next segment, where I'll be talking about some RPGs that I've been playing, and talk about some better RPGs than Final Fantasy VII. So we will be right back, or I should say, I will be right back.
Me oh, 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 me
So, my PS3, I've been playing Breath of Fire 4. I've never played it for the PS1. And it's a really good game. I really like it. It still has that 32-bit graphics that the PlayStation was known for. It kind of still looked like 16-bit, but it's just that pixelated kind of style. It's still such a fun game. I do prefer Breath of Fire 3 over it, but like I said, I do like 4. And it prompted me this question of, were there ever any PS1 RPGs better than Final Fantasy VII? And the reason why I say that is that even though Final Fantasy VII is a classic, it's a historic game, it really changed how you look at RPGs, in that they could be AAA and they could be very cinematic and you could really enjoy them. I just felt that, you know, there may be something better than it. And regardless of what people say or anything, a lot of people feel like, you know, Final Fantasy IX is better or Final Fantasy VIII. Xenogears, Lunastar, Parasite Eve, you know, Wild Arms, not Beyond the Beyond. There Arc the Lad, Alandra. There was a lot of great PS1 RPGs that you could play and seek out. And this is more of a personal answer, and I can't wait to hear people's response and stuff. I did post it on Twitter. Some people said Xenogears. Some people said, like I said, Final Fantasy IX, Parasite Eve. They said the Lunar Story. Some people feel like Chrono Cross is better. Like I said, Alandra, Breath of Fire 3. Just a lot of other RPGs that are great. Suika then 1 and 2. I think Suika then 3, but I think that came out for PS2. A lot of people feel like, you know, there are some better ones than Final Fantasy VII. Now, I'm not saying that that they all top Final Fantasy VII, because, like I said, Final Fantasy VII is very historic. It's just more of a personal feeling for people. I'm lucky that Final Fantasy VII was created, and I'm glad that they are making this remake. I feel like it just opened up the door for RPGs to be noticed. And having that kind of mentality and having that recognition, you know, I love Final Fantasy VII. I really wish and hopefully that people who haven't tried Final Fantasy VII, that, you know, if they own, I think, a Vita or a PSP, or if they own the PS3, I believe it's open on PS4 too, I think it's supposed to be coming, that they download it and they give it a play and see with their own eyes what they think. Sorry about that. Now, I understand that there are other and better PS1s, but other RPGs better than that. The series have evolved. Some people might feel like the old ones, like Chrono Trigger and Secret of the Mana, are better than Final Fantasy VII. You know, there's just so many views. Like, if you put Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past, or A Link Between Worlds up to Final Fantasy VII, that might create a big debate on which is better, which they all do in their own right. That's what I feel like. But this one is more of a personal answer. For me, I would say Final Fantasy IX is better than Final Fantasy VII. I do love Final Fantasy VII, like I said, but IX, I love the story. I love the characters. Vivi is one of my top characters of all time. I just love his direction and stuff. Yeah, I'm just gonna leave it at that. So when I return, we'll got just one more segment, gonna get some info, and then we will be out. So I will be right back. And for this last segment, I'm just going to do some announcements. Project G, I spoke about that earlier. It's coming in August, the first week. I am going to be doing blogs about that. You can find that on IGN under Anime, E-N-I-M-E. You guys can subscribe there. You know, follow me. Read some of my work. You can read my eulogy that I did, like I said, in the beginning of this episode. You can read that and leave comments and other comments like Forgiveness in Games. That was one of my big projects that I did for that I posted on IGN for my optional opinion blogs. Review a bad game day. Down there is a story behind that. At the end of this month or the next Thursday, One More Podcast is going to be recording their last show at 7:30, so you guys can check that out. At the end of this month, One More Castle will cease to exist. I believe their website will still be up, but they are disbanding and moving on to better projects. I will miss those guys. I do follow them on Twitter. And, you know, hopefully they're doing other great things that they still could continue to report on games. So do check them out at onemorecastle.com. You know, look them up, look over their site. You know, send them questions, send them love, follow them on Twitter. Yeah, if you watch their podcast, they'll give you their Twitter handles. And with that being said, they're not doing a review of Bad Game Day, which was August 8th. But I am doing it personally on my IGN blog. So Optional Opinion will be doing one. But I'm not going to call it Optional Opinion Review a Bad Game Day. I am going to call it just something. I'll probably do something crazy for Review a Bad Game Day. The one that I chose to do, I'm going to reveal, is Uncharted 2. So I am playing that game and taking notes, and I will be writing a review for that. And probably doing a small little podcast, like maybe 15 minutes, and just talk about the problems that I have with it, because the game to me personally is bad. I am going to be talking with another person about it, but not on the podcast. We'll be probably having a conversation about that. Hopefully that it'll be a good conversation. But I want to thank you guys for tuning in to the show. Like I said, Project G is coming the first week of August. Cannot wait for that. I believe the following week, that's when the Review of Bad Game Day will happen. But I do want to have time to write for the next project and you guys release it. Hopefully it's good, that you guys give it a read. And I'm just so excited to just really put it out. Like I said, I gotta finish Breath of Fire 4, but for right now, most of the work, most of the titles are set up for me to write. I just gotta write it, edit, make sure that it's all ready to go, and then be ready to release it. But you guys can follow me at That Retro Code on Twitter. If you guys have any opinions or options or any of the topics that I talked about today, I want to hear what your personal answer is about PS1 RPGs. Did you think there are some better than Final Fantasy 7? And if it is, let me know what you guys think. Or let me hear what you guys have to say about Final Fantasy 7, if you guys like it or not. You could even also talk about the Randy Pitchford problem controversy. Talk about the Batman DLC. Talk about your thoughts about Iwata, how you feel about him passing, and what has Nintendo done for you, and if, or anything, if you don't even care about Nintendo, if you don't even care about Iwata's death, or, you know, I want to hear all of that, you know, the good and the bad. It might sound crazy, but I'm open to criticism, I'm open to ideas, open to advice. I want to hear what you guys think. You can email me at myop2comment@yahoo.com. That's MYOP, the number 2, COMMENT@yahoo.com. You can follow me on the follow us on NVC Book Club on Facebook, and you can also follow Nintendo Voice Chat Podcast Forum on Facebook if you have a Facebook account. Follow me on IGN under Anime. That's ENIME. Thank you guys for everything. The conversations, the discussions, the progress with Super Metroid with my book club, for those who are listening to it. Shout outs to Adrian, Anthony, John, Johnny, Liam, Tony, just everybody who's on that page, having that conversation, talking about Super Metroid. Can't wait for that discussion, to not to see who's be picked, but to really see the video and really tune in and see what everybody thinks. There are a lot, some people are new to it, some people have played it before, but it's going to be a great discussion, and I really cannot wait. But thank you guys. Everybody have a great weekend. Have spent time with your family and friends. If you gotta work like I gotta work, make sure that you enjoy work. You gotta make that money to pay the bills. That's all I can pretty much say. The music that I actually played today was for games that Iwata worked on. And this last one comes from the console band, CONSOULSBAND. You can find them on SoundCloud or YouTube. This is going to be a tribute song to Satoru Iwata. He worked on the Animal Crossing. This is called KK Cruising. They did a jazz version of it. Very nice, very good. You know, it was reported that 1,000 people showed up for Iwata's funeral in Japan. You can see pictures of it and things of that nature. Like I said, rest in peace, Iwata. Thank you, Nintendo, for everything. Thank you, Iwata, for the decisions that you made. And thank you for the legacy that you lead. Hopefully they continue your legacy and people see the influence that you left on them. Everybody have a great weekend, have a great time, and I am out. Peace.